We all know the big game can get pretty unpredictable, which is why you need a connection that is anything but to watch it. With the Xfinity 10G network, you get the reliable connection you need to stream your favorite sports, from football to football, everything in between. Catch it all on the network made for streaming. Treat yourself to front row seats to all the games and get way more into all the sports you're into when you stream on the next generation Xfinity 10G network.
Welcome to another episode of Kane Collects. As you guys know, I'm going to say this every time. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, follow, but also tell a friend or a family member. It really helps out a lot. Also, I'm on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Kane Collects, K-H-A-N-G Collects. And I'm going to introduce my next guest and get to it right now. The co-owners of TNT Sports Cards, Tyler and Tommy. Tyler, Tommy, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. So for those that don't know what TNT Sports Cards do, they basically handle a bunch of group submissions for cards that get graded. And I know a lot of people listening here are maybe just getting back into the hobby, or they're brand new to the hobby in general. And then they go to a card show or a card shop and they look around and see, hey, this isn't all the raw cards I remember or know about when you get out of packs. They're actually encased and they have number grades on them from different companies. And you're probably wondering, should I get my card graded? Why should I get my card graded? You guys help customers in this situation, right? Whether like I know you guys are now one of the bigger submission groups in the country, and we'll get to more on the numbers of how big you guys have gotten and everything like that. But let's just get right to it. When someone comes up to you guys, a customer, and has some cards to grade, where do you go from there? Like, so how do you walk me through the process?
So most customers do what we call a TNT build. So we utilize PSA, Beckett, and SGC. If they would prefer a specific grading company, then we'll go that route. But most customers prefer, we call it TNT build. That's our fourth option, where they'll end off some cards, 5 cards, 20 cards, 30 cards, 500 cards, whatever that number might be. We'll review the cards. We'll tell them which ones they should be graded, which grading company is going to give them the best results, clean them up, prep them, get them looking as good as possible before they go in front of the grader to make sure that they ultimately get the best return on their investment for the grading fees.
So you guys are obviously offering your opinion to them, but if like a customer is dead set on a certain company, of course, you'll send it to whatever company they want.
Yeah, they get final say. I mean, it's their cards. But we just recommend what we would do if they were ours and they want to do something different. Of course, that's fine.
When you guys give your recommendations to them, do you recommend it on best return on investment or just, I mean, how do you guys, or just best grading, you know, like how would you guys determine where to send it to?
I mean, ultimately, PSA is king. They're the number one in the hobby. A PSA 10 is the most desirable grade you kind of want to get off. Besides a Beckett 10, but those are extremely tough to get. So you don't really want to send a card to Beckett trying to get a 10 because that's tough, very tough. It's when a card, we look at a card and, okay, this card's got a small little flaw. It's got a ding corner. It's got a white tip edge or, you know, a little streak or a little dent on the, you know, is that card still worth grading? Is it possibly still, maybe not a PSA 10, but could it get a Beckett 9.5? Could it get an SGC 10? SGC is a lot more lenient and will still give 10s on cards that maybe PSA is kind of in the 8-9 range on. There's certain flaws that SGC is more lenient on. There's certain, you know, PSA's maybe a little more lenient when it comes to centering. Beckett's a little more lenient when it comes to stuff on the back of the card. You know, there's different things we're kind of looking for, and we've graded, you know, I mean, tens of thousands of cards at these different companies, and we kind of have an idea of what each one's looking for.
Yeah. With that, we also look at, you know, what that potential grade is at all three. If you're looking to sell it, where are you going to get the biggest increase? If it's PC, then a lot of that comes down to what do you prefer as the customer, right? You know, there's certain cards that, you know, you might want in just a PSA or just an SGC. You know, at the end of the day, all three grading companies do a great job. And they all have their own little niche within the market. So just based on our experience, we have a pretty good idea of what makes the most sense. But ultimately, like Tommy said, it is up to the customer, you know, as far as what they want to do. We just try to give the best recommendation we can.
Yeah, you're going to give them the information, and what they do with that information is up to them, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, we're only a few minutes into here, but I mean, it's pretty obvious. It seems to be the three top grading companies for cards right now are PSA, Beckett, and SGC, as you know, as far as volume, I guess it would seem like as of right now that you guys deal with the most. You talk about PC, personal collection. If someone just prefers a certain slab over the other one, they'll probably end up just grading with that company. But when you guys talk about, maybe one company might be more lenient than another, then so you guys have experienced this then when sending cards out, you guys have noticed, hey, SGC seems a little more lenient on this than maybe PSA would. You agree on that?
100%. Yeah. And it not always, but, you know, because it's obviously going to come down to which grader gets it at which company. But it seems to, you know, they're trained in certain ways and they're looking for certain things. So overall, as a whole, we got a pretty good idea of what they're all looking for.
Yeah. And so maybe that is one of the reasons why people think PSA has a higher return on value when you get a higher grade in PSA than a high grade in one of the other companies, right? So yeah. Are there many times when you guys look at cards and go, hey, this is not worth grading? Like, this is, you know, this is going to come back.
Hundreds of cards a day we look at and say, not worth grading. You know, it's going to get an 8 or lower. And, you know, it's just not worth wasting money on a grading fee.
Yeah, unless they actually just want it slabbed for what?
Unless they just want it slabbed for their own collection or, you know.
Yeah, sometimes it's that card that you pulled as a kid. It was your first. You know, I know you're a big Michael Jordan guy, right?
Yeah.
So that first Jordan that you pulled, you're probably going to grade that no matter what. You know, you just want that in a, you know, if you pulled a 86 Fleer, you're going to grade it no matter what the grade is, doesn't matter. And you're going to more than likely go with the grading company that you want to display it in. You know, so it just kind of depends.
So you guys mentioned that you'll look at it, maybe prep it a little bit. Can you explain to the listeners like what prepping involves? And like, of course, there's a fine line. You don't want to alter a card because that would that's definitely frowned upon people for anyone listening. You don't want to put a black mark over a black border because it's white, or you don't want to cut or trim a card. And I'm not saying you guys do that at all, but what is the process with prep and how can you help with customers?
You know, lay down on a pad, you put microfiber cloth, some cleaning spray, wipe it down. We have a little tool that we use for corners. If we can kind of maybe straighten out a corner, we'll do that. And just, you know, depending on what the smudge is, or, you know, trying to wipe that off and get it cleaned off, you know, there's a number of different things. I mean, these cards go through a manufacturing process before they get pumped into packs. And, you know, a lot of times it's not what happened to the card after it was opened, it's before it even got packed out, what happened to it. And a lot of times on these on-card autograph cards, these athletes sign, you know, the athletes are handling these cards. A lot of times those cards are mailed to the athlete, not protected at all. He puts them back in a box and ships them back to Panini or Tops or what have you. And, you know, looking them over, there could be fingerprints, there's dirt, there could be a number of different things. So we're always going to, you know, clean them off, wipe them down, put them in a brand new sleeve, a brand new card saver. So to make that presentation to the grader, you know, as crystal clear and as beautiful as possible.
And we'll go over like pricing packages and what you guys charge and stuff like that. But that is all included if they decide to go with you guys to submit cards.
Well, we offer a review. There's a $2 review or a $4 review per card.
Oh, yep. Okay. All right. So you guys handle, like, I'm assuming vintage from like, you know, the early, you know, I mean, mid 1900s or whatever to like 2023, right?
Yeah. We've seen everything from T206s to, you know, the most recent, you know, football, baseball products, and basketball.
So do you guys find that, like, I always wondered this, like, so if you go to the 90s when they kind of started going like with foil stuff and chrome debt, do you think that, I would put all three companies into to group them as one. Do you find that there's a different scale maybe they use for certain 90s or even any other decade that you want to bring up than they do for like modern cards where they're supposed to be just clean right out the pack?
Yeah. I would say like all three companies when it comes to Jordan cards kind of use their own scale. You know, cards that are Jordan, you know, you think look Kobe. Like a 10 and Kobe and LeBron, those iconic rookie cards like a LeBron Topps rookie, a Topps Chrome, Jordan's Fleer, a Kobe Topps, you know, those iconic cards, they grade them tougher. They do. They put them on a different scale than anything else. And it's just the way it is. You know, the population reports are at a certain number and it's really, really hard to increase the PSA 10 populations on those cards or Beckett 9.5. So they all kind of are a little tougher on them.
And they're tough. I mean, a lot of those cards are 30, 40 years old, you know, so. If it's not graded, they're, you know, more likely it's already been opened up. It's already been, you know, sitting around being stored somewhere. You know, so there a lot of times there's a, probably a reason why it hasn't been graded, or, you know, depending on how it was stored, that can play a role. You know, back then, you know, with the Jordans, a lot of times screw downs were a big thing back in the day, which, you know, over time, if they're not stored properly, those screw downs end up causing a lot of damage to the cards.
And they come back altered from the grading companies a lot of times because they get pressed so hard down inside there. But I would say like cards from the 80s, 90s and a modern card, they're not really graded on a different scale. I mean, it's just tougher. It's a lot tougher to get 10s on cards from the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. You know, they've been around longer. They've been, you know, changed hands, you know, multiple times. They've been in and out of sleeves and top loaders. They're a lot harder to get 10s on older, you know, 80s and 90s cards are extremely tough to get 10s on.
So when you mentioned screw downs, I know a lot of people have their cards in collection. They put in screw downs and they just threw them in a closet or underneath their bed, thought they're going to be millionaires one day, and they pull them out. And you're right. I've heard the many stories where they've been penalized for being so flattened. Like, would you suggest them leave and let those cards breathe for a while? And why are collectors getting penalized for something like, I guess it just, you know, they weren't trying to alter the card, but it was actually being protected.
Yeah.
It's just the corners end up getting pinched. If you look a lot of like at times, like on an 86 Jordan, you know, around the corners, that paper almost gets like a gloss to it from the screw down.
Because it gets pressed so much.
It, you know, they definitely penalize you for it. It's unfortunate, you know, because it was not on purpose. You know, it was a complete accident.
I remember going to card shows with my dad when, you know, first, second grade, 6, 7 years old. And that's, you know, when you went to card tables, the big, thick, you know, holders were all the cool cards were in. But, you know, unfortunately now.
That's what you did with the best cards. You
took
a screw down.
Everyone did with it. It was big, thick screw down. You know, if you went to a table and they had 3, 4 thick screw down holders, you go, man, there must be some cool cards over there.
Dude, the thicker the screw down, the better the card was, you thought. Yes. Now you're like, oh my God, I just screwed myself.
It'd
like
be everywhere. Yes.
Right. So I have like a couple, you know, you guys know I'm a Jordan collector. I have PC Jordan. I got a bunch of them around me right now. And I got like some from like 96 Ultra, for example. Okay. 95, 94, that era. The chipping on those things is like, it was terrible. Like, you can't even put it in a penny sleeve because you're scared you're going to chip it even more.
Yeah. You got to slip the sleeve first to even attend. Yeah. They're tough.
Yeah. And I have like, I feel like they actually are a little more lenient just because they know like, hey, there's no possible card that's going to come in here from that era, at least like, I'm not talking like a Tom Gugliotta or something. I mean, like, you know, like a Hall of Famer maybe, and they're like, yeah, we'll give this an 8 because it's close enough.
Yeah, and I think it,
where it gets tough is when you get into that 9.
Yeah,
which the 8s are, you know, if you look them over good, you can definitely get 8s. It's starting, once you get to the 9s and the 10s, that's where it gets really tough, and that's why they sell for, you know, so much more.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
But an 8, I mean, on those cards is,
and I think
really not a bad grade.
Unfortunately, too, it's one of those things to where it also just depends what grader you get. Some of them are just more lenient on those older 90s cards. You know, if you look at the newer, like the new Metal Universe set that just released this year, you know, kind of the nostalgic aspect of that set they did was there's a lot of chipping on the cards fresh out of the pack printed, you know, a month ago. And you look at, you know, some PSA 10s on eBay, they have chipping all over them. And, you know, I'll send a card in for a customer and I'll explain, hey, you know, this has got chipping. It could get an 8. If we get real lucky, you can get a 10. But it looks no different than this PSA 10 that's already graded by PSA. But unfortunately, you know, we send it out, it might come back an 8. And it's just a matter of which grader you got and how lenient they were going to be for you.
Well, that brings up my next question. I'm glad you brought it up. Like, how do you guys feel about the grading process as a whole? I know you guys are not personal graders. You're just overlooking cards, and with your experience, you're giving customers information. But what are you guys' thoughts on the personal, like, it's almost like it's subjective in who you get sometimes, right?
100%.
It is. I mean, I think for the most part, they're pretty consistent. I mean, you might get a surprise every now and then. I mean, most of the cards that we send in are cards that we review. And most of what we send in is going to be the newer stuff, the ultra modern. And we shoot for 9 or better. You know, and a lot of our bulk orders might have 200-300 cards. And the amount of cards that we get that are below a 9, it's typically, just a couple here and there. Most of the time, none, right? So, you know, to get the 9s and the 10s, it's as long as you know what you're looking for, it's not hard to do.
Is there a human aspect and do they miss things? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know,
sometimes it works in your favor.
It can work in your favor. And you'll see a lot of times, you know, these crazy outlandish stories, someone cracked a PSA 6 and it became a Beckett 9.5. But as it happened, yeah, it, you know, But you hear about those so, you know, don't hear about it so so often, but they stick out because it's such a drastic difference in the grade when, you know, when it goes from one company to another and you get this big difference. It's very few and far between. It's not like you can just crack PSA 6s and 7s and send them to Beck and you're going to get 9s and 9s. You know, they're pretty consistent in what they're looking for.
So do you guys overall, like this is almost like sports, do you guys want to leave the human element into it or do you guys want to take it out completely? How do you guys feel?
I like it. I like having the human element. It, you know, if you put AI into grading, you know, it's hard because, you know,
people probably are not going to be very happy with the grade.
No, because there's, you know, especially modern cards, they all have print lines on the back. We know that most graders ignore print lines on the back of ultra modern cards. That's kind of a known fact in the hobby that the print lines on the back, as long as they're not what we call cluster lines where there's, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row. You know, how's AI going to look at that? They might destroy, and, you know, the grades are going to be probably a lot worse if you take the human element out of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of the grading companies, how does it look once it's in the holder? If you hold the card away from you, do you know, does anything jump out at you?
Yeah, what's the overall eye appeal?
As long as the eye appeal's good, the card should have a, you know, a chance at a 10 or a 9.5 or, you know, 9 or better, really, right?
And I'd say they miss more that, you know, they're going to miss things more than they give you a bad grade for something for no reason. You know, there's cards we send out that, they give 10s and it's kind of iffy and I'm surprised it got a 10, but I mean, that happens more. I mean, very few times do we look at a card and go, I thought for sure this would get a 10 and it comes back an 8, you know?
Yeah.
And usually if it gets an 8, I know I know what's wrong with it and I know why it got the 8.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, like 1 being I don't care and 10, I care a ton. What do you think the graders feel about the back of cards? Because you mentioned the front and the IPL. How hard are they on the back of cards? Are they hard at all or... do you think like they're more lenient on the back of cards?
It depends which grading company. And, it, you know, some like back centering is a big point of emphasis. Some companies are a lot harder on back centering and some will give you all the leniency in the world. It just the print lines on the back, pretty much all three grading companies will ignore.
Give some room.
They'll give you some room there. You know, white corners on the back that you can see or chipping on the edges, you know, they'll all knock you for that.
Yeah, so creases in the corners.
The front definitely, you know, the front is definitely carries more weight to the overall grade, but the back's important. I mean, if you have one white tip corner on a back corner, well, that could be the difference between, you know, a 9 or a 10.
Most of the time, if we get a grade that we're not expecting towards lower than what we expected, it's because we missed something on the back. Most people don't miss the front of the card because that's what your eye's drawn to. So, you know, I would say, you know, the back, they will get you, but...
and you got to pay attention to indents on the
back. Indents are the big one.
The biggest thing that people miss, and if you send a card out and comes back a 4, 5, or 6, it's an indent on the back of the card somewhere in the writing or the stats or the picture that's hard to see and you didn't pay much attention to it.
For you guys, personal preference for Tyler and Tommy, if you're for your PC, rank them what matters to you the most in order. Cornering, edging, surface, centering. Just for keeping in your personal collection, like you like to look at.
Centering is the most important. That's the most, that gives it the best eye appeal. Perfectly centered card, you know, makes it looks the nicest. I'd say corners are next. Because if I'm looking over a card, first thing I look at centering. Next thing I look at is corners, then edges. You know, sort of depends what this, if it's a print line that I have to hold the card at a certain angle to look at. I mean, for my PC, I'm fine with it. And, you know, it just kind of depends, you know, what, you know, if I'm collecting it for myself and how I'm going to display it or where what company I might send it off to grade to, you know, it depends on that surface line or print line on the front.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely centering.
Yeah, because front. I mean, that's just what you're drawn to
probably
right away.
Surface after that.
Yeah. And then corners and edges?
Yeah. It just depends, I guess. On
what I mean, they're all important. They really are. I mean, you know,
edges on the ultra modern really don't come into play that often, except sometimes you get a little bit of chipping on the back, but most of the time the front are in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
But
yeah, edging seems to be more of a 90s type issue with the foil and whatnot. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at vintage, a lot of times centering is going to be the big thing, right? You know, if you look at a SGC 3 of a Mickey Mantle, you know, typically that one with better centering is going to go for,
if you're looking at,
you know, sometimes cards, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 more. Yeah. So
it's crazy because when I was a kid growing up collecting cards, I mean, you just collected raw cards. You didn't really care or whatever. It was the player you cared about mostly. Now I look back at my old collection, I go, oh my God, they cut these cards like crap. You know, like most of these cards are way off center. They just, whatever printing factory they came out of, they didn't care. And I really didn't notice that much until now, knowing that, you know, that's so important. I look back, I'm like, this is off center. This is off center. This is,
I mean, even the more modern cards, it's, yeah, you know, you have the same issues too. Off center print lines. I mean, you know, these cards are going through a manufacturing process. You know, they're not trying to make every single card as perfect, as pristine as possible. They're just trying to pack them out, get them to shelves, get them sold, and make money. You know, they run
it's like,
through
yeah, you know, it's just an assembly line of just printing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just like anything else that, you know, you're in and around your house or anywhere, it all goes through an assembly line. You just don't care about the condition.
Just think of the images
stuff
of newspapers being printed.
Yeah.
Right. That's basically the same thing with cards, except for after that print, it's getting cut up into however many mm-hmm. pieces.
So you guys also brought up something that I want to talk about, it, which is the canyonist gap between a 9 and a 10 as far as value. Okay. Now, PSA, or whether it's BGS, or maybe not so much with SGC, but there is a gap, of course. How do you guys feel about that? And I mean, I'll just full transparency, I have a lot of graded cards. So it's not like I'm against graded cards. I actually really like raw cards as well, because I'm just a collector at heart. I don't do this for a living. It's not an investment for me. Although I know I can, it is, because I collect Michael Jordan, it's kind of an investment in itself already, but I do it because I love collecting. But I find grading is, to me, kind of a necessary evil. And that's not a knock on you guys or a job you guys do, because actually I'm thinking about sending some cards to you guys to look over and maybe send out too. So, but with that being said, how do you feel about the gap between the, you know, return on investment and grading scale? Do you think like, hey, this is good for the hobby, or like, hey, this needs to close, it shouldn't be that much? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think the biggest thing is nines are way undervalued, you know, because there's a lot of nines when you look at the amount of cards that don't pass. And the condition of them, in a lot of cases, a nine value is the same as raw value, where that a PSA 9, SGC 9, I don't know, Becca 9, that card is probably better than 75% of the raw cards that are out there.
Of the same card.
You know, of the same card. So, I mean, I think the nines are way undervalued. You know, it's almost like we've gotten to the point where everybody's kind of, you know, gotten to the point where it's, you know, PSA 10 or nothing. Right. You know, you do have the SGC 9.5s that get a little bit better than raw. SGC 10s, you know, still do okay. Beckett 9.5s get a little bit better than raw. But now, like they used to, you know, it used to be a Beckett 9.5 and a PSA 10 were, same, you know, right, the same value.
5 years ago, they were the same.
It's, you know, crazy, so how much the gap between a 9.5 from Beckett and a PSA 10 is now.
In a lot of instances, a Beckett 9.5 sold for more because they graded the autograph. They put subgrades. People were, you know.
And, you know, so I think there's definitely some discrepancies there. You know, I think the hobby's kind of chosen PSA 10 as the what standard, what you want.
But I like the fact that PSA 10s are worth what they are. You know, if I'm paying money for something I'm collecting that means something to me, you know, a good condition, you know, that looks good, it's in, you know, the condition matters. And, you know, it always, even as a kid, you know, that we didn't grade cards, but we looked at the condition. We knew corners, we knew centering, we knew that if this card's worth more, if we would always call it mint, you know, if my card's mint, you know, now the grading companies will tell you if it's mint, if it's gem mint, you know, and I think that matters. I think it does make a difference. And, you know, I think the market has spoken. People are willing to pay more for a card that is labeled as gem mint.
So, I mean, what's right? Because I haven't kept up with this part, because they're so hard to come by. You mentioned it earlier, too, was like a pristine 10 or a black label 10. What's that compared to a PSA 10?
So a pristine 10 and a PSA 10 are very close now.
Yeah, Becker 10 sells for a little more.
Yeah, it depends on the card.
Depends on the card, but not it used to be almost double a PSA 10, but yeah.
Now a black label's probably double.
Yeah,
maybe a little more than double, depending on the rarity or scarcity of the card.
Yeah, they are so tough to get.
You know, but yeah, I mean, still black label's number one at Beckett. Then the pristine 10 and the PSA 10 are kind of like 2A and 2B, there's not a right or wrong answer. It really, you know, just kind of, you know, depends on what you like. And then after that, you probably got your, you know, SGC 10, which SGC has two different types of 10s. They have their, you know, gold label 10 and then their regular 10. Their gold label 10 would be like a Beckett black label. Those get, you know, a little bit more of a premium, probably not quite a PSA 10. And then of course, your Beckett 9.5. So, that's kind of your hierarchy as far as, you know, return value, I guess, on the cards.
I mean, when you guys look at cards all day and then you get your returns and you look at a someone goes with Beckett, let's say, and they get a 9.5 gem back, and they have the subgrades on there because they asked for the subgrades. Are you like, I can't tell the difference between 9.5 and a 10 corner here? Or you know what I mean? Where they're like,
yeah, it's tough. That's why we say, you know, Peter, we get this all the time. If anything looks like a Beckett 10, I want to try. I'm like, what? It is so hard to tell. I mean, I can look at any card and I can find something wrong with it. They're like, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect card. There's always going to be some little edge, nick, little scratch. There's always something. So trying to determine if another human being is going to label this as a pristine 10 or a black label, it's almost impossible. So yeah, when you look back and you see this, you know, these corners are 9.5 on this card, and this card, I think, looks worse or better, and they only got 9 on the corners in this subgrade. It's all subjective to the one human that got it.
So where their gap doesn't seem to be that big of a deal is, I think, like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you guys would know more, SGC and vintage. Like, do people still trust SGC more with their vintage than PSA? Yeah, vintage, something, right? Like, how
vintage, they're right there with PSA.
Yeah, they're right there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to eye appeal, but, you know, I mean, you look at some of the highest sales ever, they're SGC, right?
They're SGC cards.
So that list might even go farther down the list.
If a PSA 52 man or PSA 10 ever gets listed, it'll break the record, but none of them have sold at all.
Yeah.
I think it was, what, 3 of them?
Yeah, so I mean, well, to the listeners, what would you, what's considered vintage nowadays? I mean, every year, you know, getting older and older, but like,
60s and older, really?
Yeah, I mean, PSA labels it as anything earlier than 79, but I mean, yeah, I would kind of say 60s or
yeah. More. I mean, if you look at stuff like that makes sense to grade in a lower grade, right? You start getting into the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you know, you're not going to grade anything that's going to be, you know, you don't want to grade probably much more lower than a 9, depending on some stuff, obviously, you're okay with, but you start getting into the 60s. You can get away with a 3 or a 4, you know, or a 2 on a lot of things and still increase your values.
When I hear the word vintage, you know, to me, a vintage is cards that you can grade common cards that of no name players and they're valuable. And you're right, the early 60s, 50s, and 40s, you know, the older the better. But once you get into the 70s and 80s,
they started printing more of them then. So that's where it's just kind of,
you know, the 70s and 80s cards, they're kind of in that 10 or bust. You need a 10.
You'd almost label
your raw cards worth the same as a 9.
Yeah, you're almost like vintage, then modern, and then ultra modern. Mm-hmm. It's almost like there's three. You got to kind of look at it as three different categories.
Yeah, I think that's how some of the I know the grading companies put it as, because you're right. I mean, even the 70s, that's still a 50-year-old card, you know. And then you're like, yeah, this isn't like worth anything, even though you've kept it for this long, and that's too bad. But SGC, would you recommend people like 60s and earlier to, hey, go with SGC as far as return on investment? Or
a lot of times that's what a lot of people do.
It depends, because they're cheaper.
And faster.
SGC will upcharge vintage cards, but at a after graded card value of $2,500 or more. So I mean, at $15 a card, you know, you can grade a card up to $2,500 and not get upcharged. Where a PSA, you grade a card that's
over $500.
Goes over $500, you're get paying $40 to, you know, up to $100, $150, $300 sometimes, depending on what the after graded value is.
Yeah, so a lot of times with SGC, with the vintage, you know, after you factor, if it got the same grade at PSA, after you factor grading costs, you don't really, you know, necessarily always come out ahead. So
no,
and in a lot of your older collectors, they prefer the SGC. So some of it comes down to personal preference.
And I think a lot of it too is that the populations are lower on the SGCs. They're harder to find, which makes them a little more desirable. As of right now, that gap might close. It's just, you know, we'll see where it goes in the next 5-10 years.
What are you guys' thoughts on cracking and resubbing? Like, for those that don't know, like, if you already got a card graded and you don't like the grade of the card, or you think you do better, you have kind of grab out the tools and carefully break this card out of without damaging the card and resend another grading.
Grading's subjective, and I mean, we do it almost every day. I mean, we're cracking cards. I mean, we got a 9. Hey, do you want to crack it and try it again? Or crack it and, hey, got a PSA 9. Do you want to try to send it to SGC or Beckett and see if they'll give it a 9.5 or a 10? I mean,
if it's a big enough card, a lot of it depends. What do you have into it? What are you going to end up doing with it when you get it back? Is it something you want to resell, or are you holding on to it? You know, but yeah, I mean, there's the thing of it is the difference between a 9 and a 10, a lot of times, isn't that much. You know, it's once you start getting below a 9, there's noticeable you know, flaws that you're going to see.
The difference in the flaws, not the difference in the value of the card.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of it just depends on what grade it was, you know, but yeah, we do it. We do it quite a bit. Sometimes it's a success. Sometimes
it's not. Sometimes it go. I mean, because trust me, it can happen to where you crack a 9, send it back in, trying to get a 10, and it comes back an 8. It's very, you know, people have to understand that that can happen. It happens.
And you let people know that's a real possibility.
I'm 100% sure they're aware. Hey, we got a little white tip corner. You know, it got a 9. And it could go either way. You know, there's a human that's going to look at this. You know, there's a lot of human factors that go into what this card's going to get graded next time. And it could doesn't mean it's going to get a 9 again for sure. Once you crack it out, you know, that 9's gone. And the new grader is going to assign it a new grade.
The biggest probably misconception is the 8.5 or below, right? Or the 8s and below, taking those, cracking them, and getting a higher grade. You know, that's where, you know, people kind of get their hopes up or something, or maybe think they were graded a little bit harshly, but more likely there was something wrong.
Or people think, oh, maybe there's just a fingerprint on it. And, you know, it's grading companies, the graders are going to wipe the card for you too. There's a fingerprint, more than they'll wipe that off for you. That's not going to go against your grade. There's something else wrong with that card, why it got 8, 9, 7, whatever it may be.
Yeah, it's not a fingerprint. It's something else, right? And yeah, like you said, a lot of those companies, they wipe it for you and they'll grade it from there. So if I gave you guys graded cards, or anyone gave you graded cards to resubmit, you guys would crack it for them, or do I have to do that myself? Or
yeah, we charge $5, but yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, and we'll look at it through the holder first and determine, hey, you know, I mean, there's plenty of times we look at a card and like, dude, you were lucky this thing got a 9, that, you know, leave it alone. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't see anything, you know, it's hard to I can't see the surface 100% because it's inside the slab, but you know, we can crack it and see what happens.
So what are some of the big cards that you guys have been able to actually come across and send to grading companies? Like some just big time, like you thought, or grail cards where you thought, I'd never see this one day unless I was grading.
We've done 2 mantles.
Yep.
We have the Kylian Mbappe's first Prism Auto Black Finite, 1/1 from the World Cup this year. We had a customer send that in to us.
We sent in the Shield, NT Shield, Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just recently.
Yeah, I mean, we sent in,
you know, some Jordans. I think we got a PSA 9 on a Jordan.
Yeah, we sent tons of Jordans. We've got, I mean, National Treasures RPAs galore. I mean, it's hard to even think about.
Babe Ruth, we've done the Ruth Gowdy, the 1933 Gowdies. You know, during NT season, we get, I don't know, probably anywhere from 40 to 50 quarterback RPAs.
Yeah, basketball just released the Palos, I'm sure, starting to
roll in. Yeah, we'll see some of those.
I got 2 pictures today from people sending them.
Yeah, so I mean, a $10,000 to $15,000 card is something we see almost daily.
No, I mean, and it's funny because, you know, we have a few employees, and we were the same way too. You know, when you first started doing this, people started, new names started spreading and getting more and more cards, and you know, the mail used to be so much fun to open and see all these big $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 cards. You know, and it gets to a point, and you just get numb to it. They come every day. They're just every day. There's, you know, they're just right in the mail, right there.
Yeah, but there's got to be even. You're probably right, but I mean, of course, there's maybe it was earlier when you guys started doing this, where Tommy, you'd be like, "Hey, Tyler, check this out, man. We got a 52 mantle over here, or whatever."
I mean, and you still get it's still fun and exciting.
Like today, we got back from grading probably one of the coolest cards we've graded in a while, in my opinion. We got a 97 portrait platinum of Jordan. They got a PSA 8. So, I mean, that was really cool. Part of it was cool is the customer thought it was probably like a 6 or a 7, and he got an 8. So, I mean, that's
$7,000 to $10,000 card.
Yeah, now. It's up there. There haven't been really many sales. So, you know, sometimes you get a card like that to where the grade surprises you, that makes it even cooler.
No, that's awesome. So you mentioned you started off small and got big. Like, so how did this thing get going? Like, and how big are you guys now? Walk me through like that, how it all started. So
we started back in 2018.
Oh, I mean, I collected my whole life, and I was always submitting cards of my own to PSA here and there. And then, you know, me and Tyler are best friends, and I was always doing it. And then he started getting a little more into it. And, you know, back then it used to, you know, it was like $12 a card at a PSA, but if you submitted over 100, you got it down to like $8 a card or whatever it was back in like 2018. So, you know, we would kind of wait till we got enough cards to send in and get a deal, you know, get the $8 per card. And we kept doing that over and over again.
We just kind of rinse and repeat.
Yeah, right around, it was 2018 Prizm, Luka's rookie year. We'd buy a bunch of Luka rookies off eBay and Shai and all these other, you know, grade them, sell them. And then it got to a point to where if you, I think it was $30,000, if you spent $20,000 in a year at PSA, you got even a better deal, a dealer's account with them. So we got to that. And then we, you know, just met some different friends in the hobby and different people that, you know, we
the hobby started to become cool again. People got excited about it.
Yeah. So, you know, we had people wanting to send cards through us, and then we started sending more cards. And, you know, it got to a point where our name just kind of kept spreading and we just kept submitting more and more cards.
Yeah. There was a big Facebook group. Now they're called Break Club, to where we ended up taking over any of the hits that got hit in their breaks. They would have sent direct to us, and, you know, it's one of those things where somebody would maybe hit something cool. They'd send it. We'd get it graded. And then after that came back, then they would send more. And it just kind of was a snowball effect.
Yeah. So, you know, we were both working full-time jobs, and, you know, the grading submission stuff just kept, you know, more and more customers just, you know, the mail used to always get sent to my house, and it was getting to a point where there was 20, 30 packages a day of customers sending cards. And we're just like, we got to make a choice here. We can't keep working full-time job. This is a full-time job we're doing on the side. So
And something else that kind of helped us too is when PSA had to shut down, when they reopened, there was limits to what you could send, how many you could send. It had to be a higher value card. And when they reopened, I think they capped us at like 400 cards.
Yeah, it was like 100 at first.
Yeah. It started small, but we ended up getting to like 400. The general public was capped at like 5 or 10. And it was kind of a lottery system, I think, too. So for us, you know, and you had to have a membership, you know, to where then people, you know, would start sending, you know, through us, and it just kind of grew. But it was pretty much all word of mouth, you know, very little really advertisement from us. And it helped too, when we were able to get to the point where we could offer the same pricing as, you know, you going direct, you know,
guys are out in like Portage, Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, just like small area, not even this side of Michigan. And it just like, how big are you now? I mean, because I know you guys are really big now.
Probably if you go all three combined, we're probably top 10 in the country.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're one of PSA. We spend over $1 million in just grading fees alone at PSA a year.
I mean, probably combined with all three of them. Yeah. I mean, it's probably, over $1.5 million, you know, just in grading for all three.
And so, I mean, people obviously trust you guys with the results and their cards. And so,
yeah, we submit probably 2,000 to 3,000 cards a week, between Beckett, PSA, and SGC.
Yeah. And you guys, how do you guys take submissions? If someone listening right now is like, I want to use these guys, how do they get a hold of you guys? How do they submit their cards? And do they have to do it in person? Can they mail it?
Yeah, most people mail it. I mean, we deal with people all over the country,
all over the world.
Yeah, we have people in Canada, Puerto Rico, I mean, all over. But right now, the way it's been worked is most people either connect with us on Facebook Messenger or through Instagram, you know, to where then we'll send them a copy of our form. They fill out the form, send it to our address, and then we get in touch with them once we get the cards and just kind of go from there. That's all going to change in about 2 to 3 weeks. We've been working on a website over the last year and a half to where you'll just submit right through the website. Each customer is going to have their own custom portal, to where they'll be able to track all of their orders, do their submissions right there. It's going to be a real easy, simplified process. Basically, you're just going to select your service level, or if we're building the submission, just TNT build. That's probably what, you know, 90 to 95% of our customers will do. And then really, you just put your quantity of cards, print that off, include it with your package, ship to us. And then, we kind of take care of the rest from there. But
it's not ready yet.
But it'll...
Right now, the best place to find us is TNT Sports Cards Group Submissions Facebook group.
Yeah.
We've got about 8,000 members in there.
Yeah. That or TNTcards.mi on Instagram.
Yeah. So people go to those two places on the web if you want to find out on grading and submissions, things like that. And they'll update you once the website's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the website's up,
it's
we'll
almost
be
done.
Yep.
I definitely want to have you guys back on again, because I know people are probably going to ask me on the side after this episode that, you know, some more grading questions, and I'm sure it's stuff that you guys get all the time, and you'll do the best you can to help these guys out.
If you want to do another one just with common questions, you know, anybody, you know, that has questions, we can do a Q&A, anytime.
Yeah, definitely love to have you guys back. Do you guys only do sports cards? Do you do other cards, or do you do comics, anything else?
Anything that, no comics, but you know, Pokemon cards, Magic cards, you know,
any of the trading card games we do.
Yeah, autograph authentication, the PSA, but you know, anything like that.
So real quick, actually, this just came up. I just thought about this for autographs. So like a lot of cards, you know, everyone knows you can pack pull autographs or redemptions or whatever. What about, what are your thoughts on guys that go to like games or practice or whatever and gets a card that's not supposed to be autographed and getting those graded in? I mean, is that something all three companies do where they just, authenticate it?
PSA and Beckett do that SGC for in-person. Won't. SGC won't for in-person.
But it used to be big time taboo, yeah. But I think it's more accepted in the hobby now, and people will pay
money. Probably one of the biggest cards in the hobby.
Yeah,
was the Tom Brady showcase,
clear showcase masterpiece, one of one rookie
that just got graded,
and it's autographed.
It's autographed by on an in person auto.
That one I was
that one's a little questionable,
but I mean it's just
it's a good auto. At least it's a 10 auto. It's a nice bold blue auto. It does look good, but that's something 10 years ago. No, that
people would have been like, you ruined the card, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm still going to get like those. You ruined the card, but it's his card.
It's more acceptable now.
I am personally not a huge fan of it. I'm a big pack pulled guy. Like, I think that's how things should be in the trading card industry. That's just me. But I think, you know, we have a hobby because you collect what you like and collect how you like. But, yeah.
And I tell us, I'm more of just a card game. I would rather have, a gold refractor number to 50, not a card. To me, it's a card. It's a card. And, you know, some ink is cool. Don't get me wrong. But I just, to me, stuff I really like and enjoy is stuff that's not out of, cards, an actual card, nothing to do with autographs or game memorabilia, stuff like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's still sweet, but.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, I'm going to have you guys back on. There's so much to talk about in general, maybe Q&A and just the hobby in general. I appreciate it. Tyler, Tommy from TNT Sports Cards. You guys have any questions about grading and whatnot, go to their Facebook, go to their Instagram. Hey, they do a lot of cards, but they can handle it. They're getting bigger. They're going to have a website out. And also, do you guys ever plan on opening up a card shop or a brick and mortar or anything like that?
Yeah, we kind of outgrew our office. We just bought a building in Portage. To where it's 3,000 square feet. Half of it's going to be our grading operation, and then the other half is going to be a card shop. So we're still working out some details there, but we're going to have...
We just closed on the building.
So. Yeah. It's probably... It's a complete gut and remodel for the card shop side. So it's probably looking realistically like third quarter next year. But we're working with a couple other collectors to... bring some things. I think that'll be a little bit different. It should be fun. You know, we look forward to it.
It's going
to
be awesome. I can't wait.
Which actually just reminds me, sometimes I'm on eBay a lot, just like everyone else, kind of just looking at cards or whatnot. And I see it would be sold by like TNT Sports or whatever. And then I'm assuming those are customer cards that they want you to throw on, that you're consigning. Yeah,
there's multiple TNTs.
Okay.
So, what we try to do, we're tntcards.mi.
Okay.
There's TNT North, which is one out of New Jersey. I think there's a TNT on Whatnot. So there are, TNT is not the most original name, let's be honest, right? We weren't really thinking, but it sounded good with, Tommy and Tyler, right? You know, we're pretty creative. We're not going to lie, right? But, we could have done a little better job with the brand, but.
No, but I swear, I think I've seen TNT MI and I've seen some Jordans and
No, we have a big eBay name.
Yeah, we do. We probably eBay, do.
We get
200 to 300 cards a week on eBay typically. And that's something that could grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just like, hey, keep me in mind when you see some sweet Jordans come across your desk, man. I was like,
we get a lot of them. I can tell you that much.
Like that. Let me know before you put them on eBay.
If you want it.
Huh?
That portrait's probably for sale if you want it.
I'm gonna take a look into it, man. Yeah, I haven't even seen that. The comps gotta be so low, or there can't be a ton of comps on it. So you'd have to check that out. But I'm always looking low end, high end. I love them all. So,
yep.
So I appreciate it, guys. And like always, guys, thank you for listening to the podcast. Like I said, if you enjoyed, refer a friend. We're gonna have these guys back on. I appreciate it, guys. And as always, keep collecting. If you collect what you love, you can't go wrong. Thanks for listening.